Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Judge Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. My co-host Mike Neff and myself are here to break down an entertaining race weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Joey Logano picked up his first win of 2020 by electing not to pit prior to a green-white checkered finish on Sunday, as the two leaders Ryan Blaney and Alex Bowman both did, finishing outside the top 10. We'll also discuss six Chevrolets finishing inside the top 10, while just one Toyota cracked the top 15. In the lower National Touring Series, Chase Briscoe picked up his first win of what he hopes is an 8-plus win season, while Kyle Busch dominated the truck race, and in doing so, Kevin Harvick has placed a bounty for a full-time Cup driver to enter one of Busch's final four races in the series. Should they win, Harvick will award that driver with $50,000, as Marcus Lemonis matched it for a total of $100,000. We've also got Josh Williams coming up on the podcast to take us through his 13th place finish, a career best for him in a 1.5-mile track. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Vegas with Neff. All right, Neff, the last time we talked, we weren't really sure what to think. It was just kind of a sad day, a sad couple of days with the whole Ryan Newman incident. But since then, obviously, a lot of good news has come out. A lot of news came out by the time our podcast even released last week. It's just we had recorded it on Wednesday morning. But Ryan Newman got out of the hospital just 41 hours after the incident, after being transported to the Halifax Center there in Daytona. Now, if that's wild to think after, you know, the crash we saw, I was honestly preparing for the worst.
I think we're all prepared for the worst because they drug out those stupid panels. And the minute that comes out, you're expecting them to start pulling body parts out of the car. Yeah, it was amazing to go from serious but not life-threatening injuries to walking out of the hospital, holding your daughter's hands, not wearing shoes. Not totally sure why he wasn't wearing shoes, but I'm sure there's a reason. But yeah, I mean, that was an amazing development. And now the questions are still there. And hopefully Ryan says he wants to make a statement when he comes back to the track about his injury and everything. You know, obviously they're dealing with a head injury. My assumption is, and again, we're totally speculating, is that he was out cold in the car. And that's why, you know, when you're out cold and not responsive, they treat it with kid gloves and they want to really diagnose you and let you sit for a couple days, because sometimes things will pop up that you don't initially see. So I understand it at that side of it, but it's also frustrating to feel that we had to sit around and wait for 2 hours to figure out if he was alive, and in 37 hours he's walking out of the hospital. I mean, it just, the severity part there seems to be crazy, and that's a little bit on a frustrating side. But super happy that he's out. I am curious how much they're gonna share with us on the developments or what all was going on with the car. I've heard some speculation from different people about what was going on and why they had to cut him out and the different things there. I mean, obviously the window was crushed, so I don't know that he could have fit out of that window if he'd wanted to. But it's great news. Glad he's back at it. Chastain did a great job in his car this past weekend. We'll see who is in it going forward until Newman can get back. And once again, the safety advancements that have come since the early 2000s are amazing and continue to keep our drivers alive, and that's what they're ultimately designed to do.
For sure, yeah. It seems like, from what I'm understanding via Roush, that Chastain will be in it for the foreseeable future, at least until, like you said, Newman can or wants to come back. And it was interesting because Steve Newmark, president of Roush Rennert Racing, had a press conference right before the race on Sunday and said that, you know, Ryan's goals haven't changed for this year, still wants to win the championship, wants to get back as quick as possible. I think all of us are very thankful that he's just healthy, that he's out of the hospital, that he, you know, obviously alive, because that was, as we talked about last week, a vicious incident. One of the worst ones I know I've seen in a very long time. So happy he's back. And it was also, I guess, you know, we talked about last week how it seemed like it took forever for the safety crew to get there. But in reality, I think that's just because of the severity of the wreck. Because NASCAR went through a timeline on Saturday at the track with... did you see this?
Yeah, that it took them 19 seconds to get to the car, 4 minutes and change to decide to flip it over, 6 minutes they got it over, and then he was out of it in like 8 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, so those aren't the exact numbers, but then I think the 19-second one is. And it, so it seemed like a very long time. But it really wasn't, especially with that severity of the crash. So just wanted to start off the podcast by, you know, thanking the Lord that Newman's okay. And obviously all the updates last week kept getting better, better, better. And then this morning, as we record on Tuesday, I saw that he posted a tweet this morning of from yesterday of him going fishing and saying he got some nice therapy, which was catch and release of fish. So
absolutely
happy to see that he's doing well. But Neff, on to the Vegas, because that's where we were at this past weekend. I thought it was really a tremendous week of racing, specifically the Cup race. We haven't really talked anything about the Cup race offline, but the restarts were wild. You had comers and goers. There was actually passing for the lead. I don't know if we should expect that all season with this package, as both of us last year were very critical about it. But I thought truly the racing was really good.
I thought it was too. I mean, there were some stretches there where it struggled out a bit, but in, you know, in typical fashion, restarts were insane.
Oh my God.
And it's the beauty of Vegas. The track has aged and the tires wear out, and we're at a place where, you know, tires make a difference. And, you know, and I know we're talking Cup at the moment, but we saw it in the Xfinity race. I was really hoping for a caution with 12 to go, because Ryan Sieg was going to smoke them like a cheap cigar because he made a set of tires last. And that's what we want out of this sport. We want guys to be able to take a chance and do something different and have strategy come into play and have tires be part of that strategy. And I constantly argue about it, that tires aren't rocket science and that we need to figure out a way to get away from them being so complicated. And if we could use these same tires at every mile and a half track, we would be better off. But they'll give us 8 excuses to Sunday as to why we can't do that because of loads and heat dissipation and all sorts of crap that really shouldn't matter. It should all come down to the driver's hands and the driver's feet. And you have the balonies on your car, and it's up to you to make them last.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we're a big fan of tire wear. We should see it again this weekend at Auto Club with the way that place has aged over the years. But, yeah, handling was an issue. And like you said, the Xfinity race, too. The Xfinity race, I mean, we'll get into this later, but it was so refreshing to hear drivers have to lift off the throttle. Because all weekend in the Cup race, I mean, you were wide open through 1 and 2. And pretty much through 3 and 4, too. But, you know, there's 25 lead changes in this race. And some of them, yes, of course, were under green flag pit stops. But a lot of them weren't, and the majority of them weren't. So there's a lot of passing for the lead. Obviously, the Fords, you know, really came to play. The Chevrolets showed up, Neff. Hendrick Motorsports, that was the best they've looked in a long time. But in the end, it was Joey Logano. They got the win, his second straight win in the spring race at Vegas. And that was because of a late race caution that set up a restart while some of the front runners elected to pit. Logano, who was running third prior to the caution, stayed out. So in a way, because what, 7 cars in total stayed out with 2 laps. I know tires matter, and we only got one. I mean, in theory, you only need 1 lap of racing, and that's what we got. There was a caution as soon as they got back to the line because there was a big crash. But in theory, you only need 1 lap of racing. So, I mean, this was a pretty easy call, in my opinion.
I mean, I was honestly a little disappointed that it didn't play out that tires mattered. And again, it may be a bit because of the fact that we had 7 cars stay out. And if it had only been 3 or 4, it might have made a difference. But I personally thought those guys that got 4 tires were going to be able to make a run. And if we had gone the full 2 laps, maybe we would have. But the way it looked like it was playing out, and part of it was the competition for second place. those guys got to dicing it up so much behind Logano, it gave him a chance to get an extended lead. And I think that was ultimately what was going to help him out, was that those guys behind him were dicing it up, and it let him get out and get away to where it wasn't, it was going to be too hard for him to run him down. But I thought it was worth taking the chance. I probably would have pitted if I was further back than fifth, because of the fact that tires did seem to make a difference. And unfortunately, they seemed to make a difference after three or four laps in hindsight. And that's kind of what bit him. But I like the fact that that strategy call was even available. And again, we're talking about tire wear, talking about strategy, that we love to see it. The fact that those guys thought it was worth making that call shows you that the tires were falling enough that it was a possibility. And so I was all for it. I thought it was the right call for guys, and it didn't pay out, but it was worth a shot.
I think it was definitely the right call for a lot of guys, because there's only 24 cars on the lead lap. And for instance, let's take Bubba Wallace for an example. He was 19th prior to the caution. He restarted, I believe, 7th and finished 6th. He got past William Byron, who, you know, restarted 2nd. Like you said, the battle for 2nd between him and DiBenedetto. The highest guy of the guys that pitted was Jimmy Johnson in 5th, which was his best finish since July at Daytona. So, you know, I love the stats, and there were so many stats because of this lineup. Matt DiBenedetto finished 2nd, tied his best finish ever, and his first top 10 at a mile and a half. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., you know, him and Brian Patti, he led 30 laps in this race. a lot of it was because, you know, they elected to stay out longer than anybody twice during.
Yeah, they did a dice roll, and it paid off.
It did pay off. Yeah, and once that happened, once they got the caution, I want to say it's like 35 to go or so, he stayed up there. He was in the top 5 to 6, so he had a good car. Finished 3rd. Austin Dillon, best finish since Michigan in August of 18. We talked about Johnson. Bubba Wallace, that was Richard Petty Motorsports' best finish on an intermediate track in almost 10 years with a 6th place finish. And then you got Ty Dillon, 10th. I mean, that was his first top 10 on non-super speedway. So that late race caution really shuffled up the lineup. And granted, like you said, if we'd gone another lap, a lot of those guys probably would have fallen out of the top 10, because the tires would have made a difference, I think. But I don't think they would have for the front row. Like, you had Logano, and like you said, with him and with DiBenedetto and the battle for 2nd with Byron, Logano was gone. So I don't know. I feel like the rule of thumb, and obviously I'm not a crew chief or anything, but the rule of thumb, if you start on the front row, if you have the opportunity to start on the front row, stay out.
Yeah. I mean, that's – and again, it all comes down to laps.
Right.
I mean, if there's 15 laps to go and you stay out, you're going to get swallowed.
Right.
But when it's a green-white checker, or if you got 3 or 4 laps, unfortunately, you probably need to stay out. But, I mean, that's been the dilemma since the first race ever, probably, is, you know, when you get that caution flag with just a handful of laps to go, whatever the leader does, the guys right behind the leader are going to do the opposite. And so if you stay out, the guys behind you are going to go in, and then it's up to you to try to outrun them. If you go in, they stay out, then you got to try and get by them. And it's the way racing works.
For sure.
We love that. I mean, it's the human element.
Of course. Now, as you saw post-race, Ryan Blaney was pretty disappointed because he didn't have the best restart either. I mean, he got kind of tangled up in that incident. You know, he finished 11th, but it was shaping up to be a pretty good battle between him and Alex Bowman. And obviously, Greg Ives called Bowman to pit road, and he finished 13th. And that's even, you know, worse. That's more, yeah, more of a loss. So, for both guys, I would imagine that's pretty frustrating because, you know, we've talked about this a lot in here, but the new guys, the younger guys, the new generation of drivers, they haven't been able to pull through a lot besides maybe Chase Elliott, who's won 6 times. This looked like it was going to be Blaney's day. And Bowman was giving a run for his money. He was definitely going to get there. I don't know if he would have passed him because there was 5 to go in the caution flu, but he was within a half second and he was coming. He came from over four seconds back. So I was entertained throughout from the race throughout, but I would say in hindsight, obviously being 2020, Blaney and Bowman, I guess Ives and Gordon made the wrong call.
Yeah, I mean, if when you look back, you can always second guess, but it turned out to be the wrong call. But at the time, I thought it was the right call. And you know, if I honestly think if they don't come in, I don't know that they win it. You know, I don't think they had enough to pull it off, but they might have. I mean, you don't know for sure, because that's why we run races. We don't do them on paper.
For sure. So, Neff, this is the second straight week that there's been a wreck on the final lap. Last week, you know, besides the Newman wreck, but Chase Elliott wrecked on the last lap, too, at Daytona last week. That was a single car incident, really. You know, he ended up rolling after he came to a stop. I don't know if he ever came to a stop. He got rolling. He was out of the way. This one, it was just a melee. It was a mess. It looked like, I tweeted out, it looked like everyone was on ice because they were sliding, slipping, wrecking. You know, John Hunter Nemechek seemed like he took a pretty big hit. And he had a good race going, too, and he ended up finishing 24th, which is a disappointment for that team. But 2 weeks in a row now, they threw a caution, NASCAR. They threw a caution this week, did not throw in at Daytona. Obviously, at Daytona, you have about 50 seconds or so, a little less than that, to get back around. Las Vegas, about 30, 31. Do you think that the caution that NASCAR threw on the last lap should have been a caution?
I think so. When you look at it, and they fortunately have been getting more and more consistent about it. When an incident happens on the last lap, start finish to turn two, they kind of let it play out for a bit and make sure that it looks like everybody can roll away. And as long as they're able to go, they'll usually let it play out. But if you've got somebody whose car is disabled or for whatever reason looks like they may need attention, then they have to throw the caution. And I think that was the deal on Sunday, was you had a couple cars that were not going to roll away from the incident. And so you can't have cars coming back to them at speed when they're sitting completely still, because if something, God forbid, does happen, it could be catastrophic. So I felt like they made the right call in both instances.
I totally agree with you, especially on this week. It should have been a caution. But do you feel like maybe they should have waited even a few more seconds?
Yeah, not really. I mean, you were in what? It was about middle of the backstretch, wasn't it?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, I mean, by the time somebody's going to recognize the caution and get slowed down, if you wait till they're in turn three, if they recognize it, they're coming out of turn four at a buck 70.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and that's coming back at those cars pretty fast. So that's where I think they called it at about the right spot.
Yeah, so I agree. I definitely warranted a caution. I think both instances are much different from one another. Like I said, Chase got rolling. And that was also, it was right past, I want to refresh my memory. It was more towards turn one, wasn't it, than even the start-finish line?
Nah, it was like right at the start-finish line.
Okay.
I mean, he was like going under the flag stand when he spun.
I thought it was like halfway in between. But regardless, yes, now that I can remember that, yes, it was right after the start-finish line. But he kept rolling. So this one, I mean, it looked like a big old shit show on the front stretch from like 15th on back. Kyle Busch got in and he finished 15th. So, yeah, I definitely think it should have been a caution. And unlike the past, like the debris cautions, like what is and what isn't a caution, this I would say, 10 times out of 10 that they're going to call that a caution. And yep. Rightfully so. But Neff, I brought up Kyle Busch. I was really, you know, him pre-race, him, Denny Hamlin, Christopher Bell, all, I don't know what part NASCAR took on their car. I'd have to go back and look because I can't remember off the top of my head. However, they all had to start in the rear. Martin Truex Jr. was, you know, he started up at the front, really on the pole, since Kyle had to go to the back. But he was the only Toyota that really showed out in Vegas. The other guys out to lunch, especially Hamlin. And that was the most I've seen Kyle Busch run outside the top 10 in probably in years. So were you surprised by this? Because obviously last year Toyota won 5 of the 11 mile and a half races. And they, I mean, let's face it, they won 19 races overall last year.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. It really seemed on Sunday that dirty air was a real hindrance. And guys, once they got near the front, their cars were significantly better. And if they got back into traffic, it was a real penalty. And I think that was what happened with the Toyotas. They had a, in tech, they had some Bondo on the nose, which NASCAR deemed to have changed the shape from the default shape of the nose. And I don't know, you know, what thickness or how much of a change it is to be deemed a change, if any Bondo at all is considered a change. I don't know how that works in tech, but they were all called out on it that they had Bondo on the nose that altered the form or shape of it from what the default shape should be. So those guys end up in the back, and you heard it. They specifically talked about it with Bush's team during the race. That, and if you watched them, he and Bell both came forward, but it was a very slow process, and it was like each and every segment or each and every time between cautions, they'd pick up a spot or two on track, but it wasn't like they were flying up through the field. And it was just a really laborious effort to get up through the field. So I know Bush felt like he was going to be a lot better when he got up near the front, and I don't think he was as good as he thought he was going to be. But the bottom line for him was just his pit crew did not perform like they normally do. They, at least what I saw in the little graphics, the minimal graphics that they posted up, when Kyle was near the top 10, they gained 3 spots on the last pit stop. But prior to that, I don't think they gained anything. I think most everything, they either held serve or they slipped a little bit. And ironically, he gained the spots on that last pit stop and then got bottled up on the restart and ended up slipping right back to 10th anyway. So it was, it was not a stellar day for the 18. And Christopher Bell, dude is a dirt track racer. They showed a replay of him sliding through 3 and 4 where he was completely hung out all the way through, and it was impressive that he held on to it. There was a handful of those shots this weekend, 3 or 4 of them, of guys that were just completely hung out and managed to keep the car from not spinning. And again, this throws me back to this car and this package, that it is so hard to spin these cars by yourself.
Right. I think you hit on a lot of points there, obviously, with the Toyotas, and it is a little worrisome. And I know, you know, you can only take so much from the first real race of the year outside of Daytona. But with the highest finisher being 15th Kyle Busch, that's worrisome, in my opinion. And, you know, obviously, Kyle probably had the best car in the 500, one of the top 2 or 3, definitely, and then blew the motor. But he's 27th in points right now. Not that that matters, because he'd probably go to Fontana this week and win and lock himself in and gain 10, 15 spots on the points, because that's how tight the points are at the beginning of the year. But it is worrisome, because also, like you said, you know, Christopher Bell, he really hasn't done a whole lot in the first two races, especially this race. I mean, he, like you said, but it was a Toyota problem. So it's hard to judge outside of Truex, which, maybe that was more of the surprise that Truex didn't struggle compared to the rest of the JGR cars. Even though that's been Truex's wheelhouse over the past 3 or 4 years, Las Vegas, winning there twice. But then obviously he had his own problems and, you know, I don't know if he got put in the wall or hit the wall. He said Kurt Busch kept going up the track on him. And so he got in the wall, obviously blew the tire, and he ended up finishing 20th, which is his second worst finish at Vegas in his career. So not a good day for him. Obviously, Hamlin, I don't know what was going on there. That was well documented on the broadcast. That, I mean, and we saw this at times last year enough too. Like, there would be races, obviously, he won 6 times last year, that he would just set the world on fire. But then there's races where he struggled. There was one race in the playoffs, 1.5 miles. It may have been Vegas, where they kind of struggled. And he even elaborated this on this pre-race to NASCAR on Fox, that last year Vegas was their worst track, and they're going to need to work on this, because that's 3 straight finishes, I believe, outside the top 10 for him at Vegas.
Yeah, Denny has stretches like that, though, where they'll go a race or 2 or 3 and they just can't get out of their own way, and then he'll turn around and have a run of 3 top 3s. So I agree with you that Vegas has not been in their wheelhouse for a while, and they need to work on that for sure. We've seen this interestingly with a few different cars, though. That was a thing a couple years ago when the Chevys were really bad, but Kyle Larson kept running top three.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were like, it can't just be the car because they're running well with the car. So there had to be more to it. And I felt like that was this weekend as well, that there had to be something beyond just Toyota. It had to be something that they had done in the setup that was common among those other three cars that made them struggle so much worse. Or it still could just be that, again, Truex was at the front, so he was out in the good air, and when you're in that good air, it unfortunately still makes a big difference in the sport.
And on the flip side of that, I mean, Chevrolet definitely came to play this week. I alluded to earlier, this is the best they've looked in a very long time. Obviously, Chase Elliott. Yeah, I mean, Chase Elliott swept the first two stages. I would say he definitely had the best car. Unfortunately for him, had the flat tire, the left rear flat, where he spun out and made some contact, which, you know, hindered him to 26th. But, you know, there was a point in time where there was a seven-car breakaway almost after a restart. Four of them were Hendrick cars. I don't know when the last time I saw that was, outside of, like, a start of a super speedway race.
Yeah, it's been a solid 2 years that Chevy has struggled. And this new change that they've had this year that's just a little bit, it's subtle, but it's different, it seems as though they've done their homework and they've got these cars running much better after one non-super speedway race.
And then even though Hendrick, I mean, it looked like that, you know, they had turned the corner or maybe even, you know, not come back. Because like I said, there's only so much you can judge off of one race. But then Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is the highest finishing Chevrolet in third. So, and then Austin Dillon is the second. And then you have the first Hendrick car being the third top Chevy finisher in fifth, which is good for Chevrolet. I mean, they had six cars in the top 10. That's nothing. That's something to be proud of because they've struggled for so long. And, you know, a variety of teams, six different teams. You had Childress, Germain Racing, Chip Ganassi Racing, Richard Petty Motorsports. There's so many different teams that got in the top 10 for Chevy. And that's a good sign, even though, like we talked about, had there been just one more lap, a couple of them probably would have fell out. But still, a very solid day for Chevrolet, and like I said, had Chase Elliott not have had that incident, I think he would have won, or he was at least in position to win.
Without a doubt. I mean, they had the car there, and it was in contention, and that's what you ask for anytime you're at the track, is to be in the mix when that checkered flag is getting ready to fly. So it's again, I feel like all the Chevys made progress more than anybody else, more than Toyota, more than Ford, and that's why there were so many Chevys battling it out near the front this weekend. And it encourages me because it's great when all three manufacturers are solidly in a mix every week. It makes for better racing and better excitement and better intrigue to the fans. But it's also a big deal because, face it, there's more Chevys in the field than any other make.
Yep.
And so when the Chevys aren't in the mix, the people that are in the mix are pretty limited. But once you get, as you just mentioned, there's Childress and there's Ganassi and there's Hendrick, all those Chevy teams, you get all of them into the blender, it makes for a better smoothie. So it's a good deal when they're all running for it.
Even Germain, like I know I brought up Ty Dillon, him finishing 10th, and that being his first top 10 on a track other than Daytona or Talladega. But they were at times in the top 15 for, you know, a pretty big portion of that race. So, you know, how much of this do you feel like is the new nose? Because there was so much talk about this going into the year. And last year, I guess the past 2 years, with how the new Camaro, how the nose just, I mean, obviously the nose controls a lot of the car. So, how do you feel like that is the new change has kind of helped Chevrolet out?
I mean, it seems to be huge. Again, it's overreaction time. We've only been to one race that wasn't a super speedway race, but that the nose is the first thing that hits the air. and how that sets up the air going around the car, under the car, over the car, that breakthrough, the initial breakthrough, the wind can be a massive difference in the car, and how that air gets to the rear spoiler and how that splitter affects the front end. All of that is determined by the air breaking over the nose size enough, how important it is to have the nose doing what you want it to do. And it seems like after one race, this nose is a definite improvement over what they had last year and the year before.
For sure. So, like you said, overreaction time. But if this continues, if we get through the West Coast swing, you know, we got Fontana and Phoenix coming up, and they're still performing like they were at Vegas, look out. I mean, because for so long, Chevy dominated the Cup Series. It hasn't been, you know, refreshing or anything like that. But, and like you said, you want all three manufacturers to run well, and especially Chevrolet, since they have so many of the teams. But Toyota and Ford could be on their heels, and Chevy could take advantage. Neff, anything else about the Cup Vegas race?
No, other than I still despise competition cautions. Always have, always will, because they don't force everybody to come in. And I think it's disingenuous for what they claim it is. If it's going to be a thing to check tire wear, then have everybody come down, change all four tires, and have everybody go out in the same order that they came in. And let's truly make it about safety and about worrying about the tires. But they won't tell you this, but it's about TV. And if there's not a caution in the first 30 laps of a race, they tend to lose a quarter to a third of their audience. And so that's why any reason they have to throw a competition caution, they do it. And I think it's disingenuous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because everyone's on the same playing field with tire wear or anything. So, I mean, obviously they always do it if there's any weather the night before. Or sometimes even if there is no weather, which is crazy.
Yeah, there's like heavy dew, and they're like, yeah, wash the rubber off the track. I realize it, and I would love to see if somebody could ever give us visual evidence. Because having worked around racetracks a lot in my life, trying to get the rubber off of a racetrack is incredibly difficult. Because that stuff is like glue when it's heated up and then stuck down on a track. I've literally seen tracks where they go out and pressure wash in order to get the rubber off of it. And these guys act like a little, you know, passing rain shower washes every bit of rubber off the track, and it just doesn't. So I understand that it probably makes a little bit of the rubber wash off, but unless you have a real downpour like we had that ended the Xfinity race early, or postponed it, unless it's coming down like that, it's not washing rubber off the track. And I would love to see Fox or NBC get out there with a camera and give us real close looks at the track. But in all honesty, what washes the rubber off is when they go around with the air tightens and the jet dryers, and they basically, while they're drying the track, that blows the rubber off. But if they just have just a rainstorm overnight, it's not washing rubber off.
Right. Good insight there from you, Neff. Because, yeah, I mean, there's, it seems like every other race was a competition caution, it seems like. Yep. And really there's no advantage or disadvantage to any team running on a green track. I mean, that's what you do for practice. You don't throw any competition cautions in practice. So obviously a little different, but still, I agree with you on that one. Neff, I did want to hit on one more Cup-related topic. Last week, I believe it was Wednesday, Corey LaJoie was on Sirius XM NASCAR Radio and kind of discussed the incident with Ryan Newman following the, you know, at the end of the Daytona 500 last week. And I'll paraphrase what he said. He's, you know, there's nothing wrong with the racing. It's the best racing out there in a lot of people's minds. So his opinion is you don't change a thing about it. You just keep learning from the wild crashes. And especially with the new, you know, the next gen car coming, which is reportedly 30 to 40% safer than the current car. Now, Kyle Petty, he kind of went on a tirade about it on the NBC podcast last week, kind of saying how it totally contradicted what Corey said following the crash last week. But in a way, I mean, I feel like a lot of people do enjoy super speeder racing most because the element of danger is super high, and you see all these professional drivers, you know, doing what they can to get. I mean, that's the biggest race of the year, too. So what is your opinion on Corey's comment?
I'm with him on I don't want to make dramatic, drastic changes. But at the same time, and we talked about this off air before we started the podcast, they've let the speed get carried away again. If we go all the way back to Bobby Allison hitting the fence at Talladega that brought us into the restrictor plate age, they wanted to get the cars back down to 185 or below. And for the longest time, we kept them in that range. And now in the last handful of years, we've let that creep up again. And fast speed at Daytona was 206 by John Hunter or Eric Jones or somebody that round. But 206 is flying.
Yeah.
And at that speed, when these cars turn around, they do the opposite of what they're supposed to do going forward. When they go forward, they create drag and downforce. When you turn them around, they create drag, but that drag turns into lift, and it tries to pick the cars up off the ground. And that's why we have, when the cars turn around, you see those Roush flaps deploy. That's why we've got the shark fin that goes down the one side of the car. That's why we have side skirts, to try to minimize the amount of air that can get under the car and disturb the air as it's flowing over the car. And at 200 miles an hour, it doesn't get disturbed enough by these other elements that we've got on the car. And I other than getting them slowed down a little more, I don't know that there's much that I really want to drastically change. I mean, I'm still personally a fan of them with really small spoilers. It makes them really hard to drive, because at that point is where you get people that have to lift and have to actually maybe even use the brakes to get through corners. But if we're not wanting to do that, we're trying to get these big runs and keep the cars as close together as we can with the bigger spoiler, I'm fine with that. But I think we need to reduce the holes in the tapered spacer so that we get these speeds back down to 180, 185. It's not going to be a visual difference to the fans, and it's going to go a long way into keeping these cars on the ground.
And the one thing I can really add to that is maybe, and we talk about this a lot, maybe a tire that wears, because that's going to slow the cars down naturally. I know Door Bumper Clear hit on that this week on the podcast about this very same topic. So, no, I agree with everything you said on there, too. You know, it's fun when we disagree, but we're agreeing on a lot of things this week. And, yeah, I mean, this is a lot of people would say this is the most entertaining racing. A lot of people would classify as not racing. Like I said, the real season really started this past weekend in Vegas, where you're going to tell who's going to be good, or overreacting time, but who could be good and who might not be good for the year. And like I said, after the West Coast swing, which ends in a week and a half, we'll have a better indication for the going forward for the rest of the year. But as far as the super speedways, I mean, with the tapered spacer that they've implemented over the past four races now, it's really led to some incredible racing. I think it puts it back in the, not back in the driver's hands, because it is in the driver's hands at super speedways. It always has been. But the runs you get, and, you know, you broke it down perfectly with all the tech topics that you brought up with the air and the insight of the tapered spacers. But it's been there's been some pretty good races with this tapered spacer. I think back to both Talladega races last year were incredible. We had a great finish between, ironically, Newman and Blaney at Talladega. So, yeah, it's hard to say you'd change anything. You know, I know a lot of and maybe for someone like Kyle Petty, it hit home harder. And he admitted this. It hit home because we didn't see Newman get out of the car immediately. And obviously, Kyle had a son that passed away because of a crash 20 years ago. And he mentioned that's always going to hit harder when you don't see a guy get out of the car right away, because that's what we're immune to now. That's what we're accustomed to. But I'd have to agree with Corey on this one. And with the next-gen car being safer, it's just going to lead to more chaos probably at these tracks. So if we're prepared for that, then, you know, let's hope that the past 20 years of safety advancement continues on. And it will. NASCAR's obviously already reviewed the crash from last week. And they had a really good press conference about it on Saturday at Las Vegas. Enough. What was supposed to happen on Saturday at Vegas was the Xfinity race, but that got postponed after the Cup race, at least three quarters of it, after the Cup race on Sunday night. Chase Briscoe got his first Xfinity win of the year. His goal prior to the year was 8 to 10 races, which is a big number. But I talked to him on Friday for some content that will be coming out next week on for Front Stretch on my Eyes on Xfinity piece. He feels like that's realistic, a number, and it's also... I mean, this year's going to be top-heavy, too. Just, you know, last year was obviously top-heavy with the big three. I know you love that term. With Custer, Bell, and why am I forgetting? Reddick. Reddick won the championship. Combined to win 21 of the 33 races. It's possible we see the same thing this year between three drivers. Who they will be? Well, I would imagine Briscoe's in that, you know, realm. And really, you know, he came back because for a while he was... I mean, Ryan C. got past him. Ryan C. got an incredible car. But Briscoe led a race high 89 laps. Cindric was in position to win at times, but it was Briscoe that got the job done. And really, I mean, 8 to 10 wins, Neff, is that realistic?
That's a big number. when you're talking about a 32-race schedule, when you're talking about winning 33. A quarter or more of the races, that is setting lofty goals. But, hey, if you don't set goals, you can't reach them. And Briscoe is not short on confidence, and he shouldn't be because he can drive anything. He's in equipment that's capable of winning, as we saw from Cole Custer. So he knows that the competition, while still good, is not as good as it was last year. And he is now in one of the cars that was one of the three best last year.
Right.
And so if you're looking at a car that is capable of winning week in and week out, you're going up against a field where, I mean, you, as you said, who are the top three or the top four? We don't know because, you know, Allgaier is going to be in a mix. We know that. But it's, you know, the Gibbs guys are young and unproven. So they need some seasoning yet. I mean, of the guys that have experience in this series and have the ability and have the cars, Briscoe's one of the top two in the sport, I think. So I don't think it's really braggadocious to say he could win that much. It's a very lofty goal, but I don't think it's unattainable. And if he does and he ends up winning a championship doing it, I mean, he set out to do it and he got it done. And then you face the dilemma – where does he go?
Right.
You know, is it time for Chase Briscoe into 14? Is Harvick moving on? I mean, that would put some pressure on Stuart Haas to move him up if he wins 10 races in a championship.
Well, it won't be the 4 since Harvick signed the extension, but the 14 will be open. You know, I'd imagine the 41 won't be open since Custer just moved up. And he's obviously got family ties to Stuart Haas Racing. But, yeah, you're talking about who could replace the three from last year. I want to say Cindric, but he led 39 laps and, like I said, in a position to win the other night, but he just always finishes second or third on these intermediate tracks or tracks other than a road course, really. He's got to win one of them in order for me to say he's a real contender. And we've seen Allgaier win a bunch of races. Obviously, Briscoe, this is his third career win. I think Briscoe gets 8 wins this year at least. Like you said, if you don't have goals, you can't achieve them. So when you look at the Joe Gibbs Racing lineup, I think Brandon Jones will probably win 1 or 2 races this year. Harrison Burton's kind of surprised me. I mean, he even last year, he seemed to run better in Xfinity than trucks. It just seemed like he was set up better for it. He's also in the 20 car. We know that's good equipment. Then you look at, like, your Michael Annette, Noah Gragson's. Like, I don't want to say I don't see them winning. But let's face it, they've both only won one race, and that's been a lot, specifically, and it's both been at Daytona. So colleague, you could say, but I mean, Ross looked good for the beginning of that race on Sunday. Justin Haley was terrible, self-admittedly, over the radio. At one time he said, I don't even know what to tell you on what to fix.
Yeah.
So Chastain, you know, I would throw him in there, obviously, from raw talent standpoint. But colleague also hasn't won a race on a traditional oval yet. You know, obviously Daytona, and they won it the Roval, but not on a traditional oval. So they have to show out, too, in order for me to consider them one of the favorites, along with Briscoe and Allgaier. But there's a long season to go, obviously, and anything can happen. It is racing, so 8 wins is definitely a high number, but I definitely think he can achieve it. Now, if I got a couple more topics for you, the truck race. The action was entertaining outside of the lead, in my opinion, because Kyle Busch dominated that race. So much so that on Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning, Vegas time, Kevin Harvick put up a $50,000 bounty to any Cup driver that enters a truck race, you know, the rest of the truck races Kyle competes in this year. And if they beat him, they get the $50,000. And then Marcus Lemonis of Camping World Gander Outdoors matched that. So it'd be a $100,000 bounty for any Cup driver to beat Kyle at Atlanta, Homestead, Texas, or Richmond. So all within the next 2 months. This would be a tough task from a lot of standpoints, but it's kind of an interesting concept, I believe.
I think it's cool. I mean, being from the short track world, you see bounties from time to time, but the one thing you see about bounties that needs to be enforced is that they've got to be, the person a bounty is on needs to be running at the end of the race, because otherwise you get dudes out there just trying to wreck him. And, you know, if he gets wrecked, did you really beat him or did you just wreck him? So having the caveat that he has to be running at the end will make it a better deal if somebody can claim it. And I would hope that whoever claims the bounty, or if he wins them all, that Harvick will step up and pay money to Busch. Whatever comes out of this, I hope that money ends up going to a charitable organization. I would hate to think that dudes that are getting paid millions of dollars a year would hang on to that money. I would hope it would go to serve a better purpose. But, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people get tired of seeing Kyle go and win in the support series.
He's won 7 in a row in trucks.
Others appreciate it for what it is. The one thing that is consistent, and it has yet to prove out otherwise, no drivers complain about it. I have never heard a driver complain about Cup guys coming down to run against them. They always say that it teaches them, they learn, and they want to run against the best. So I never hear drivers complain about it. When the day comes that there's an uprising among the drivers about it, then I will start to listen. But until then, it's just a matter of the sour grapes from people on the outside. And in all honesty, I'd like to see Harvick do it. I mean, Harvick's a guy used to have a truck team. So get in a truck and go do it yourself if you think he's beating up on these guys.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to see it being a realistic expectation or even a realistic chance for anyone to really do it. Because let's face it, Kyle's in the best equipment in the truck series. Now, last year, the drivers he had, I mean, they underperformed, Todd Gillen and Harrison Burton. Kyle has definitely said that on many occasions. But, I mean, we talked about this offline. So, Denny Hamlin seems really interested in it. And Denny Hamlin always likes a challenge. So, Richmond would be the track for him, as we've talked about, where he could probably pull this off. But so, that's mid-April. So, he's got 2 months, really, to get a truck and probably an existing truck. I doubt it'd be one of Kyle's, even though he's drove for Kyle before in trucks. It'd be obviously his home track, the trucks returning to Richmond. That's a big storyline too. But outside of that, I mean, it'd have to be a Toyota. So you're talking Stuart Friesen's team, Hattori, maybe they run a second truck. But it is a cool concept, I think, that because, like you said, a ton of people are sick of Kyle and winning in these lower series, whether it's trucks or Xfinity. But also, like you mentioned, the drivers really, they don't complain about it. And in fact, I talked to, like I said, I talked to Chase Briscoe on Friday. He brought this up himself. He's like, I'm happy Kyle's running at Phoenix because he'll really be able to, you know, see where his team's at based off of how Kyle runs in the 54 car. So that, you know, that's a cool concept too. And I don't hear the truck drivers complaining about it either, even though he's won 7 straight, which is a record, dating back to Pocono 2018. It's still crazy he's won 7 in a row. he was 5 for 5 last year. I mean, hate the guy, love the guy, hate that he runs the lower series or not. Still very impressive, even though he's a cup driver. Because it's still a race. I mean, anything can happen.
I have said it for years that I think the thing that will be cool to see is 3, 5, 7, 10 years down the road, whatever it is, near the end of Kyle's cup career, he decide to get out of cup and go win a truck championship. Because he's got an Xfinity and he's got cup. Nobody has won all three yet. So that would give him an opportunity to win all three. And, I mean, I've said it all along. He could win 20 out of 24 races.
Oh, yeah.
If they legitimately went for it. And it would just be an amazing feat to see him dominate the series and be the first guy to win all three. That said, and there's some people that complain about this, but you have to remember the other thing that Kyle gets out of running these races is he evaluates his team, and he is able to figure out, you know, is it the truck, is it the crew, you know, what, where are their weaknesses, where are their flaws that he can't see from outside of the truck. And so it serves a purpose not only to give him, you know, let him run some races, which he just loves to do. It also lets him evaluate his team, and it helps cement some sponsorship deals.
Yeah, I was going to bring up that part.
That's the same reason Dale Jr. runs a race, is because he agrees to do it, and then Hellman's agrees to do 4 other races for other drivers or whatever their agreement is. That's been a long-standing deal, is that the Cup guys that own these Xfinity and truck teams will run those races in exchange for the sponsors that are on the vehicle doing additional races for their other drivers. And, I mean, that's a business model. And you can't really hold it against them because they, like everybody else, they pay their bills with sponsorship. And if they can secure sponsorship because they're running these other races, you got to go for it.
Right, yeah, I was going to bring up that point, too, about the whole sponsorship deal. But, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if anyone can do it, because I'd imagine there's other drivers that are interested, but we'll have to
wait. I want to see Denny in the 00, telling you.
So speaking of the 00, Neff, I'm glad you brought that up. It's almost like you knew we were going to talk about it. But on Friday, for the truck qualifying, Angelo Ruck driving the 00 for the Raun brothers, just coming off of pit road. She ended up spinning out and not even in turn one yet. She made the transition off of the apron to the track. Now Parker Kligerman, who was, I believe, in Europe at the time, talking about esports, said this tweet, and I want to get your reaction to this, because I think this is a pretty interesting tweet. He says, let's raise the qualification standards for the top 3 series. That's pretty much what he said. Then he went into a side note how he can't wait till a woman driver absolutely laps the field, etc. But I've talked to some drivers about this. I'll leave them nameless. But how the qualification standard that NASCAR has currently it's not. We claim these drivers to be the best in the world, but really, are they? I mean, some of them are, but some of them aren't. And not to throw shade on Angela Ruck, but I would classify her in the latter.
I mean, there's a process, and I don't know. It's not so much a check boxes off of a checklist process to be approved to run at the national level, but there is a process. And you have to show that you ran at other levels and accomplished certain things. The accomplished things part is the one that I question. And I'll throw a name out just because I've done it before, but Harrison Rhodes runs cup races. And as far as I know, Harrison Rhodes has never won anything. I mean, I at the local late model level, K&N, any ARCA, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Somebody please point it out. But I, as far as I know, I don't think he's ever won anything. And I feel that there needs to be some level of success at the lower levels.
Right.
But that said, there is a process. Brett Bodine, former pace car driver for NASCAR, is in charge of the driver certification program. And there are people, they watch tape, they go to races, they review things, and they make sure that there are certain things that people can show that they've accomplished or at least have the skills to do in order to be approved at the national level. So do those need to be more stringent? Does it need to be a checklist? Maybe. But at the same time, and again, we talk about business models with this deal. The reason Angela's in that double zero, I believe, is she's bringing some money.
For sure. She's admitted that.
You know, so you can't. You have to be cognizant of the fact that if you tell a team that their driver can't compete, you may be forcing that team out of business. And you can't, you know, you still, at the end of the day, your job is to put on a show for the fans, and car count matters. And the car counts in general have come down, but if we're still working to fill those fields, that's got to be part of the equation. And sadly, we still aren't at a point where a driver with skill can show up and a team then finds money. There are a few examples where that's still going on. I think Christopher Bell is one of those. Larson is one of those. Daniel Hemric is one of those where they really aren't bringing much in the way of money, but they have the skill level and the teams are willing to work to try to find more money to get them in it. But for the most part, the people, especially at the K&N level and the truck level, are people that are bringing the money to buy the rides. And it's the nature of the sport right now. That said, I mean, Angela's been around this for a while. It's not like this was her first time. And I don't know that she's gone through enough to be cleared to run at Daytona and Talladega. So if she did enough to be cleared to run and has completed races at those levels, that you're not going to let her run Vegas. So, I mean, I get Parker's sentiment, but in reality, she's shown in the past that she could compete at tracks that big and bigger and has run full races and full seasons. So I don't think that there was – I get it, but I don't think it was truly justified to call her out.
Well, I guess the best example – and you're totally right with the whole car count thing. If car count wasn't a factor, I don't know if they would – because this is more of a business than even really a sport now, that would really matter. But – I can bring up last year at Homestead, right? So at the time, she was driving for Nice, and Ross Chastain was in the 45. Now, obviously, Ross brought a little money to the table, and also he had made the championship four, so we know Ross's talent. So they're in similar equipment because, let's face it, Angela brought money to the table too, or else she wouldn't have had that opportunity with Nice this year with Rayum. Ross got to the lead. She was last. She got lapped in 7 laps. I don't know. Yikes.
I may be wrong, but I seem to remember Mike Harmon getting lapped in like 4 laps before.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the size of the track, etc., but it's tough. It's tough because
the optics are tough. I'm not going to lie about that.
For sure. Neff, any final thoughts on Vegas or anything racing related that I might have missed?
I don't think so. Love us some Vegas.
Cool. Well, we're going to Fontana, out west, way out west, L.A. I like I've seen reports that a couple of the teams are doing Kobe Bryant tributes, which I'm all for. I think it's a really cool concept. I saw the track's going to have a Kobe Bryant tribute too, obviously being out there near L.A. But we got the Cup race and the Xfinity race now. We'll start with the Xfinity race. Who you got winning?
I want to reserve comment on the Kobe Bryant stuff. 36 vehicles is a good number. I'm going to go with my boy Allgaier. Man, he looked good again this weekend, and then it screwed up on him. He's got to start on a run, and I'm going to start riding, like, stick with the Biff. I'm going to run with Allgaier.
I'm going with Briscoe. I think he makes it two in a row. He likes worn out tracks. He obviously runs very well at Homestead. Finished fifth there last year, third in the race, fifth in points. Won in the truck race there a couple years ago. I got Chase Briscoe going back to back, this time winning at Fontana, and then he'd be a quarter of the way to eight.
Yeah, man. What's his paint scheme look like? Is he doing the same paint scheme? Because that paint scheme looked great this past week.
And his helmet is sick, too. Badass helmet.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then we got the Cup race, Neff. Kyle Busch, this has been his kind of wheelhouse over the past 6-7 years. Last year, he dominated the race, came from the back after a pit penalty, still won to pick up his 200th victory. Who you got winning? Is it Kyle or someone else?
You know me, I'm pretty confident it will be Kyle Busch, but I like to be I don't want to be a homer on him all the time, so I'm going to go out on a huge, skinny little limb and say Matt DiBenedetto finally gets it done.
That would be impressive. I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have expected him to finish second last week, and granted, he probably would have finished 7th or 8th had there not been a late caution, but he took advantage of it. Him and Greg Irwin stayed out, finished second, so that would be definitely a great feather in the cap for him getting his first win in at Fontana. Kyle Busch, I feel like it's going to be hard to beat. I think Toyota will come back, be strong. But I'm going to go Kyle Larson. He's won there in the past. Chevy looks good. Larson really picked up this package at the end of last year. I think Larson goes to victory lane for the first time this year.
He likes some two-mile tracks.
All right, well, we've got an interview with Josh Williams coming your way, who's coming off a 13th place finish in the Xfinity race this past Sunday at Las Vegas. So let's get to my conversation with Josh Williams. All right, Josh, you started 20th on, I guess, Saturday, finished 13th on Sunday this past weekend at Las Vegas. Overall, take us through your race with the 92 team.
The end result was really good. You know, I felt like we had a successful weekend. We definitely could have been better. Our race car wasn't as good as we think it should have been, and we're really going to work on that at the other intermediates and try to get our package a little bit better. We're just missing just a little bit, but all in all, a good weekend for DGM. You know, I think as a whole group, we showed good speed with both cars, and, I think that's what you're going to see every weekend out of us, you know, whether – no matter what type of track it is.
Now, you say you should have been better, but the 13th place finish was your best on an intermediate track of your career. What's that mean for you and your team to have that finish at such an early point in the season?
We're excited. You just thought we won the race, really. I mean, you know, after the race, we were really happy with our results. And, you know, we know in our minds that we can still be better. So, to finish where we did and know that we still have room to improve that's really good. You know, if we would have finished 13th, said, man, you know, that's the best car we've ever had. I feel like, you know, that would have been not as good as finishing 13th going, man, I know we could have been better. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I think we're going to have a good, successful season, and as long as we can keep the elements that we can't control toned down a little bit and, stay away from all the bad luck, I think we'll be very good.
Yeah, and you finished just behind Justin Haley, who obviously runs for Colleague, ahead of Maya Snyder, who runs for RCR, even though he had some troubles. He got dumped by Noah Gragson. Both who run, though, for bigger Xfinity teams. So that's got to be promising racing near those guys, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, anytime you can get close to those guys without them having some type of issue it's very good, you know. And right there at the end of the race, I think we were running, you know, almost 2/10 faster than the 10 car. So, I mean, it just shows that we can run with these guys. And, you know, if we had the same equipment as them, I'd like to see what we could do over at DGM. I think we could contend for wins and definitely run in the top five every week.
For sure. And running for DGM Racing, a smaller yet competitive team in the series, how much of a disadvantage are the intermediate tracks for your guys' program?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, these guys are, you know, they've been to the wind tunnel. They've got their bodies a little bit better than ours. They've, got a little bit better motor package and, just data. You know, a lot of information that we don't have access to. And we're working on that. You know, we're trying to lean off some people to get some more information and to make our program better. You know, we're trying to, you know, go to the pull down a little bit more and work on our cars. We did, try to update our motor program a little bit this year. So we're just making small gains and, doing the best. I guess we're trying to maximize what we can for our budget. So just trying to put the money in the right places to make our program more successful.
And kind of off that, Josh, obviously the 2020 season just began, but in what areas have you seen the most growth through the first two races compared to last year?
I just think our race cars are better, you know, as a whole. I think from setups to, motor package, I think we're just all around better. I'm going back to these tracks that I've already been to two times or three times or whatever. So I kind of know how it's going to play out, things like that. So that helps me a little bit. And we work really good together. You know, everybody on the team gets along for the most part. And, we all jive. You know, we're all racers. We all like to have a good time. And we like to run up front and run fast. So that all helps.
And clearly you switched numbers from 36 to 92 over the offseason. But is there anything really different at DGM this year, whether it's new chassis or personnel?
We actually, that chassis that I ran this weekend at Vegas was a 2015 RCR car. That was the first time we've ever ran that chassis. So we've still got a little bit of work to do on it to make it as good as it can be. That's helped out a lot, and we've got a couple more things in the works. I think we're going to try to acquire maybe one or two more newer cars. The newer your equipment is, man, your results are going to show. You know, as far as aero wise and latest and greatest suspension parts, it makes a big difference.
For sure. Now, in the first two races, at least according to Racing Reference, you've had two different crew chiefs, the first being Adam Brenner, and then this past weekend being Mario. Now, Mario was the crew chief for all of last year, obviously the team owner, so I'm curious, what's it like having the boss in your ear for an entire race?
It's pretty cool, man. Me and Mario, we get along really good together, and we actually, this weekend, we had a crew chief swap. Mario, he stayed on Alex's car, and I had Adam again this weekend. Whenever we bounce back and forth and I have Mario, we work really good together because, you know, we both have a good understanding of the car and what it, you know, we both know both sides. You know, he's a racer himself and he's a crew chief and I've done some crew chief stuff and I'm a racer. So, you know, we both kind of know, hey, this is how the car is. What do you think? You think we should do track bar or air pressure? You know what I mean? So we kind of bounce ideas off of each other and I feel like our success has shown, you know, last year working together that we make a good team.
Now, obviously, we're in the middle of the NASCAR Goes West part of the season, and so I'm curious, how does this affect a team like DGM having this so far, you know, so early in the season to be so far away from the team shop?
Yeah, it's very tough. The trailer's loaded down, I'll tell you that. We stayed Monday after the race on Sunday and went to the racetrack and changed gears and swapped motors and cleaned everything up and, tried to get the car back ready. We had to fix some crush panels and stuff. So we did that on Monday, and then me and my guy that works for me, John, we flew out that night, and we've been working on our Phoenix car, trying to get it ready here in Charlotte at my shop. And then right now we're currently headed to the Bassett shop, and going to pull it down, get it ready for Phoenix, and then we're going to put it in their trailer, and they're going to take their car and my car to Phoenix, and then we're going to use my car that I raced in California this weekend as a kind of common backup, because we're going to take three cars to Phoenix.
So it's definitely a collaborative team effort.
Yeah, we all try to help each other. It's it's tough, you know, and we're all small organizations. We don't have a lot of people, so we got to make the best of everything.
And
try
I
try to help each other out with that.
Yeah, and I saw, like, Tommy Joe Martin's team, they stayed out west in Vegas to prepare the Fontana car for this weekend. Does personnel from DGM, do they go back and forth, or do some stay out west, or how does that work?
Pretty much everybody stayed out there, except for me and John. Me and John came back to, I guess, they get our Phoenix car ready. But, yeah, they all stayed out there and worked on our cars for California.
Got it. So, couple more for you, Josh. With so much talent gone from the top of the series this year, and obviously three of those teams not returning at all with the 00, the 2, and 23, does your mindset from 2019 change at all?
No. I mean, it doesn't matter if the field's got 10 Kyle Busches in it. You know, we still want to go out there and be the best we can be and finish up front. You know, and I know we can run with those guys even if they were still in the field or still existed. It doesn't matter. We can still run right there with them and beat them, I think, in my eyes.
Kind of off that, what is the 92 team's goals for the year?
I really think we can, I think we can make the playoffs, you know, despite a win. I think we can make the playoffs. You know, maybe one of these speedway races we can get lucky and catch a win. I mean, we've showed really good speed at Daytona and Talladega, you know, last year and at Daytona beginning of this year. You know, I'd like to win a speedway race for DGM and then make the chase. I think that for us would be a good goal, and I think it's reasonable, and I think we can pull it off.
And then the short track, so you will too, right?
Yeah. We've had good success in the short track, and our short track program, I think, will be a little bit better this year, too. So we've tried to improve in all areas, and I think it's going to show.
Now, I'll get you out here on this one, Josh. The Xfinity Series goes out to Fontana this weekend, a place where you seemingly struggled at in the past. So are you excited for this weekend?
Yeah, I love that place, man. I think we were running 12th there last year, and we blew a motor up at the end of the second stage, and just kind of hurt us a little bit. And the year before that, I think I did a start with a steel body car, so... I love that place, man. It's really cool. It's different. It's really wide. You can do a lot of racing, you know, multi-groove. So I think you're going to see some really good racing. I feel like myself, even at Vegas, the pack was a little bit closer than it has been in the past. As far as the top 20 cars, I think we're a lot closer together than they have been. I think a place like California, you're going to see some really good racing.
Well, cool, man. Thanks for your time, and good luck this weekend in Fontana.
So much.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Fun conversation there with Josh Williams, who was fairly impressive at Vegas in the Xfinity race, as well as running in the lead draft for most of the Daytona race a couple weeks ago. And you got to remember, DGM Racing is a pretty small team compared to some of the teams at the top of the Xfinity series. So a top 15 finish at an intermediate track really isn't too shabby for that team. As always, I enjoy chatting with Neff, who had some hot takes this week, but overall, we thought it was a very entertaining weekend of racing between the top three series, specifically the Cup race at Vegas. Hopefully that type of racing is on display this weekend at Fontana, because from what I remember from last year's race was kind of a dud, with Kyle Busch dominating, having to come from the back with a pit penalty, only to come through the field and win. Again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Judge Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings truly help us out tremendously. And until next week's show, where we review the weekend's action at Auto Club Speedway, we out.